Welcome back, dark friends, as we bring Eddie's adventure in Hopkinsville, Kentucky to a close in Episode 9, The Kentucky Goblins. But don't worry, Wraiths of the Appalachian still has plenty of episodes left. Let's get on with the story, shall we? Chapter 9, The Kentucky Goblins. The rain had stopped by the time Eddie pulled the van up the gravel drive to the small log cabin. The radio had played only country music for the short trip up Highway 41, which Eddie tolerated since Willie Nelson was a musician Eddie actually liked and respected. Eddie interpreted Mr. D's silence as approval of his plan to use Jake's cabin, so he grabbed his backpack and carryall and headed up onto the covered porch with Snarly Owl. The house was completely surrounded by woods. As he mounted the steps to the cabin, Eddie could not recall when he had seen the last house. He felt that the nearest neighbors were at least a mile away. Eddie had no problem getting in the cabin. The key was right where Jake had said it would be. The accommodations inside were modest, but more than adequate. The main living area consisted of a den with a working fireplace and a small open kitchen that was separated from the den by a bar with four tall stools with curved wooden backs. Eddie half expected to see the heads of deer or other hunting trophies mounted on the walls, but was relieved to find only tasteful paintings of the Kentucky countryside and old photographs of Hopkinsville as it had looked many years before. A tiny hall to the right led to two bedrooms with a shared bathroom. He put the backpack in one of the wooden chairs at the small table in the kitchen and dropped his carryall beside it. When he stepped out onto the front porch on his way to unload the van, he saw that the two-seater swing was in motion. Standing at the top of the steps leading into the small front yard, he looked both ways for whoever might have just vacated the porch. Seeing nothing, he shrugged, shook his head, and then went on to the van to get the groceries he had bought before leaving Hopkinsville, and with barely a moment's hesitation, grabbed his guitar. Back inside, Snarly Owl padded through the house, his claws clicking on the hardwood floors as he inspected each room before pausing at the back door, where he made it clear that he wished to go out. "Okay, fella, but it'd be really nice to have you around tonight." Eddie opened the door, which led to a smaller enclosed porch on the back of the cabin. He took three more steps to open the screen door for Snarly. It would be a couple of hours before sunset, but the cloudy sky threatened more rain and cast a dark gloom over the thickly wooded property. After putting the perishables in the fridge and stowing his carryall in the larger of the two bedrooms, Eddie kicked his shoes off, stretched out on one of the two couches in the den, and flipped on the old, bulky television that was situated in a large cabinet in the corner. The Jerry Springer Show was on, a program that Eddie's parents had banned in their house when Eddie was growing up. Why would anyone run reruns of that old show, Eddie wondered. He thought of trying to find something else, but he didn't have the energy to search for anything newer. The exhaustion of the previous 24 hours soon overtook him, and within minutes, he no longer heard the voices of the bickering guests or the shrieks of the audience. When Eddie awoke, for a moment he was lost as to where he was. The den was dark, illuminated only by the light from the TV, and the sound of a steady rain nearly drowned out the sound of the newscast. The outdated clothing and hairstyles of the small-town local news anchors further confused him, until the events of the day came back to him in a rush, and he remembered where he was. "Hopkinsville really is the land that time forgot," he thought. Rubbing the sleep out of his eyes, he clicked the TV off with the old-fashioned remote on the coffee table, and then a sense of panic washed through him as he realized that Snarly Owl had been outside for hours. He raced to the back porch, almost losing his balance as his socks slid on the hardwood floor, and when he threw the back door open, he was relieved to see that the wolf dog had been patiently sleeping on the back porch. Since Eddie had not latched the screen door after letting the wolf dog out, Snarly had been able to easily paw it open and rest protected from the rain against the actual back door of the cabin. "Sorry, fella," Eddie said as Snarly stood and entered the kitchen. Eddie knelt and stroked the dog's head. "You're still a bit wet from your explorations. Let's see if we can get you dried off a bit." As Eddie walked the short hall to the bedroom where his clothes were stashed, he paused as he heard a noise overhead that broke through over the steady sound of the rain. Snarly, who had been following Eddie to the bedroom, stopped too, cocking his head much the same as Eddie to listen to what sounded like something running across the roof. He gave a small huff, and the hairs on Eddie's arm stood up. "Probably squirrels, or maybe raccoons," Eddie said. Hearing nothing else but the rain, he fetched one of the towels he had just used the day before to dry Snarly when the dog had bathed in the Red River near the Bellwitch Cave. But as he dried the dog's fur, the memories of the small creatures he had seen over the last several days with Snarleyow, and the eerily familiar display in the Pennyroyal Museum that he had tried to dismiss as an artist's comical rendering of a little green man, haunted him. Eddie found the kitchen stocked with utensils that were more than sufficient for whipping up an easy supper of stir-fry vegetables and chicken, which he piled over minute rice. The task of fixing his meal kept him from dwelling on the disturbing sound of whatever had been on the roof, and soon he was washing his dishes and pans while mentally thanking Jake for providing him with such a good place to spend the stormy night. "Sure beats a rainy night of camping, right, boy?" Eddie said to the wolf dog, who lay in the center of the cabin where he could survey nearly all the rooms in the house. "Or another night in a motel, for that matter." The window above the kitchen sink looked out on a thin band of grass that served as a backyard where a small but well-built utility shed was visible at the corner of the property. Eddie was grateful that Jake had been wise enough to have a light mounted on the exterior of the shed that illuminated most of the yard, and even wiser still to have a switch for it inside the cabin. One had to step out onto the screened-in back porch to turn it on, but at least it wasn't necessary to walk through darkness to get to the shed. The woods surrounding the property were so dense that anything lurking even a few feet beyond the tree line was as good as invisible, but the light that was provided was comforting. Eddie turned the light on as soon as he found the switch and planned to leave it on all night. As he set the cleaned frying pan in the drying rack, a movement caught his eye. He thought he had seen something moving toward the house from the shed. The rain had stopped for the moment, but the wind blew in occasional gusts, which sent showers of water to fall from the soaked leaves. Eddie got his flashlight from his backpack in the bedroom and stepped onto the back porch with Snarleyow. "Stay here, okay, fella?" he said as he secured the hook that locked the door. "Let's just see if I was imagining things, or if something is out here." Eddie knew that the simple hook provided no real protection from any invader that wished to get on the porch, but it still offered some small sense of comfort. More importantly, though, he hoped it would keep Snarleyow from darting out into the darkness. He shined the beam from the light through the screen onto the trees that bordered the property and onto the shed. "Hello? Anybody there?" The wind stirred the trees, but other than that, all was quiet. Eddie was about to enter the cabin again when Snarly huffed. Since the dog was focused on the shed, Eddie directed his flashlight back there again. For just a second, Eddie thought he saw a pale face peering around the corner of the building. It was as if a child, a bald child with oversized black eyes, had been peering at them in a game of hide-and-seek and then darted back behind the shed. Snarly stood tensely alert, eyes unblinking as he stared at the storage unit. "You see something, fella?" Snarly wagged his tail twice, but otherwise remained still as a statue. A scratching on the porch screen to their left caused them both to turn. At the same time, the sound of bare feet running on the grass from the shed made Eddie dart his flashlight back toward the shed. The bottom third of the back porch was paneled wood, with the screen framed in above that, so anything below the rail line that was close to the house was blocked from view. "Quick! Inside!" Eddie jumped back into the cabin with Snarly following after only one additional glance out into the yard. Once Snarly was in the kitchen, Eddie slammed the door shut and locked it. "Did I imagine that? Or did something just run to the cabin from the shed after something else distracted us?" From the kitchen windows, it was impossible to see anything beyond the screens on the porch, while the lights were on in the kitchen and the back porch. Eddie flipped the overhead lights off so that he could see the yard illuminated from the shed's light, and he ran his flashlight across the back porch and out into the yard. Seeing nothing but the trees, he cut on a single lamp in the den and returned to the kitchen, where he sank down onto one of the chairs at the small kitchen table where he had eaten his meal. He stared into the yard, peering intently at the trees, searching for any shapes moving in the darkness. A sudden pattering on the roof made him flinch. "It's just the rain starting up again. Calm down, for Christ's sake." An image of the cabin totally surrounded by dozens of the little creatures that he had encountered on Fort Mountain and that Snarlie had fought in the Bellwitch Cave popped into his mind, and he jumped up with the flashlight to peer out every window. He had no idea what he would do if he saw them in the yard, but he knew that just sitting and not knowing whether they were really there was worse. After a trip through all the rooms, with Snarlie trotting at his side while he shined his light out the windows and seeing nothing that did not belong there, Eddie finally collapsed in the easy chair in the den. "Am I losing my mind?" He rubbed his eyes and then blew out a big breath. A bright light flashed outside, followed immediately by a crash of thunder that shook the glass in the windows, and the lights in the cabin flickered twice, then remained on. "Perfect. That's all we need, huh, Snarlie? But I bet Jake's the kind of guy that's prepared for power outages." A search of the front closet and kitchen drawers turned up a half dozen candles, a box of matches, and an abundance of extra batteries of various sizes, and an oil-burning lantern. "Thanks, Jake. Knew I could count on you." Eddie grouped the candles so that he had several in the kitchen and den, and he put the lantern on the coffee table. When he went to bed, he could blow out the candles and take the lantern with him. And, of course, he had his flashlight. Fat lot of good that did me in the cave, though. The lightning continued to flash across the sky with loud booms every few minutes until a particularly loud crash was accompanied by the loss of power in the cabin. When the lights did not come back on within a minute, Eddie lit the thickest of the candles in the kitchen and den and settled back into the easy chair. Snarlie watched him as he went about this chore, alert but not overly stressed as far as Eddie could tell. He'd stayed with Eddie ever since they had come in from the back porch, rather than searching each room as he had done upon their arrival. "Probably just my nerves. Maybe a little self-medication is in order." Eddie got his guitar out of his case and sat on the edge of the easy chair, tuning it by the flickering light of the lantern. Although he had rarely played it, in fact he wasn't sure if he had ever played it, his fingers found the chords of the Bob Marley song he'd heard earlier in Hopkinsville. The upbeat rhythm of the reggae sound had a calming effect on him, and Eddie found his spirit lifted. He pictured the way his father had been smiling in the movie, and soon he was so immersed in his music that he did not notice when the storm had ceased once again. Song followed song, and the comfort that came with the music negated any of the soreness of his tender fingers. A crash from the back porch brought Snarlie to his feet and bounding to the back door. Eddie set his guitar on the couch and grabbed his flashlight as he followed the wolf dog to peer out the kitchen window to the left of the back door. The back porch did not extend to the width of the house as the front porch did. Eddie shined his light out onto the yard and then over to the side of the porch, where he noticed that the screen was torn, a hole large enough for something to crawl through. Eddie could not make out any foreign shapes on the porch from that angle, so he rushed to the window above the kitchen for a better look and darted the beam from the light around the porch there too. Again, he saw nothing. Either the creature had left, or it was hiding from view up against the wall of the house itself. Another pattering on the roof. Clearly not the sound of rain this time, but that of feet. Many feet. How many was impossible to tell, but Eddie was certain that more than one creature had to be on the top of the cabin. He tried to track the sound as he hurried back through the kitchen to the dining room, but a movement caught his eye in one of the den windows. He spun and shined his light on the window where he caught a glimpse of a head peering into the cabin. It was there for only a second, but Eddie clearly saw the pale gray skin and large dark eyes before it ducked down and disappeared from view. "We need to get out of here," Eddie thought, "right now." He put his guitar in the case and dashed to the master bedroom where he grabbed his carry-all. He then went to the kitchen to snag his backpack and set them all by the front door for a quick departure. Snarlie Yow had run into the smaller bedroom and was barking at the window. Eddie ran into the room and shined the light to see the front porch swing, moving wildly back and forth as if something had just jumped from it. He ran from the bedroom back into the den, where he could see the other side of the porch where the rocking chair sat, and more than one creature leapt over the porch rail as he tried to shine the light on them. As he did this, he heard another loud crash from the master bedroom, followed by barking and the sound of Snarlie running in from the other room. Eddie ran to the hall where he could see Snarlie snapping angrily at a figure that was escaping back through the window it had just broken. A rustling behind Eddie caused him to turn to the other bedroom where Snarlie had just been. The noise from the closet could only mean that somehow some of the creatures on the roof had been able to gain access into the attic and were now about to pour out of that bedroom. "Snarlie, let's go," Eddie yelled as he moved back into the den. He grabbed his guitar and the two bags and ran out the door, praying that nothing would be on the porch to attack him. Snarlie broke off his attack of the goblin thing in the bedroom to exit the house with Eddie. They ran to the van, where Eddie cursed himself for having locked it. As he fumbled with his keys, Snarlie barked ferociously at the dark shadows that ran towards them out of the darkness. Eddie finally got his driver's door open, and Snarlie jumped over the driver's seat with Eddie climbing in right behind him, throwing his bags and the guitar into the passenger seat, and slamming the door shut as the goblin things pounded on the door and window. Within seconds, the van was surrounded by at least a half dozen of the things. Their skin seemed to glow faintly in the darkness, making their large, luminous eyes seem even more frightening. They jumped onto the top of the van, crawling and peering down through the windshield and the side windows. They pounded on the glass with their long, three-fingered hands, and Eddie prayed that the glass would not break. Snarlie Owl darted from window to window, barking and growling, which caused the goblins to retreat from wherever he was. Eddie had thrust his keys into the ignition and was trying desperately to start the van, but no matter how many times he tried to crank the engine, it would not start. Eddie could see that more creatures were in the cabin, their silhouettes gyrating in the windows against the dim light of the lantern. As Eddie watched, the light grew brighter, and to his horror, he saw that some of the curtains had caught fire. Flames leapt higher in the interior of the cabin, not only in the den and the kitchen, but in the front bedroom as well. Oh God, Eddie thought, they didn't just knock the oil lantern over, they deliberately set the place on fire. Snarlie continued to keep the creatures at bay as he bounded from window to window wherever they appeared. Eddie retreated to the center of the van to give the wolf dog room to defend the front seat and move about freely. He had no idea how much time had elapsed before he noted that the attacks of the creatures had diminished. They seemed to be retreating, one by one, into the woods. The fire raged in the cabin, and Eddie could no longer make out any shapes silhouetted near it, either. Fearing that somehow the fire might jump to the van, he cautiously opened the side door to see if he and Snarlie might safely escape should they need to. He stepped out very slowly, with Snarlie beside him, and together they made a few tentative steps toward the woods. But then through the windows of the van, he saw dark shapes scurrying towards them across the yard. He jumped back in with Snarlie right behind him and slammed the door shut just as the creatures plowed into it, beating the door and windows again with their alien fists. Surely somebody will see the light from this fire and report it. He still worried about the proximity of the van to the cabin, fearing that they couldn't just sit there and hope for someone to rescue them. But as the cabin was fairly small, only one floor, he consoled himself with the thought that it was unlikely that any of the falling timbers could endanger them. The heat from the fire was intense, though, and in spite of the cool, wet night, he was sweating profusely. Once again, the goblins tired quickly of trying to penetrate the van due to Snarlie Yowl's aggressive defense, and they disappeared into the shadows. This time Eddie felt it best to wait out the attack. He lowered some of the windows to alleviate the sweltering heat, grateful that the existing breeze took the smoke away from them. Hours passed as Eddie watched the fire and looked anxiously for attacks by the goblin things. His body ached from his muscles being constantly so tense, but he could not allow himself to let his guard down, even when the cabin seemed to be nearly demolished. The rainstorm of the previous day and night was fortunate, for it kept the fire from spreading into the woods and becoming a major forest fire. The downside of that was, ironically, that had there been no rain, the fire might have gained more attention from the Forest Service. As it was, Eddie never saw or heard any emergency vehicles. As the night retreated with the rising sun, Eddie was amazed to find that he had fallen asleep at some point in the night. The exhaustion of the last few days, together with the tension of that night, had taken its toll, so that when time passed without any further attacks, he had actually slept. The sun was fully up when he awakened, and Snarlie was curled up on the passenger seat where it appeared he may have slept too. Although Eddie was still concerned about a return of the goblin creatures, daylight changed the situation drastically. If they didn't attack in the daytime, and he was able to get out of the van, he thought he could likely figure out what was wrong. Eddie pushed himself up into the driver's seat and tried the key again, thinking that he needed to see if the problem lay with the alternator or within the ignition itself. To his amazement, it started up without a hitch. "Okay, Snarlie," he said, not believing his change of luck. "Let's head back into Hopkinsville and see if we can report this fire. Maybe Mr. D will give us some advice here along the way." Eddie turned the radio on, but the only thing he heard was bad country music and some local talk shows. "I feel like I need to let Jake know what happened first," Eddie said aloud to Snarlie as they drove. Even though he got no responses other than yes and no answers to direct questions, he felt it helped to talk to the wolf dog. "I feel really bad, though, to have to tell him that his house burned down. And how am I going to explain it? Sorry, Jake, but those little green men your town is so famous for destroyed your house." The drive back to Hopkinsville was just a short drive, and since Eddie didn't have any contact information for Jake, he thought he might go back to the Big Fellas diner where people seemed to know him. Big Fellas was busy with a good breakfast crowd, but not full, and Eddie was pleased to see Rachel, the waitress who had served them lunch the day before when he entered. "Oh, hi," she said with a friendly smile as she pulled a menu from the stack beside the cash register. "Nice to see you back so soon. One for breakfast?" "Actually, I was hoping you could help me locate someone." "I'll do what I can. What's their name?" "Well, I forget his last name, but his first name is Jake. I'm looking for the gentleman that ate lunch with me." The waitress frowned. "I don't remember you sitting with anyone here. You sure it was for lunch and not dinner?" "No, we sat right there," Eddie said. "He was just having coffee and he let me sit with him since the diner was full." "I remember you sitting there, but you were alone," Rachel said. It was Eddie's turn to frown. The waitress was so pleasant, with an obvious desire to be helpful, he didn't think she would purposely lie to him. But he knew what he knew. "Well, don't you remember?" Eddie coaxed. "A nice, older black man. Dresses neatly. First name's Jake. Said he was into real estate here. Manages the old Princess Theater." Rachel's eyes narrowed. "You've just described Jake Warren." "Yeah, that's him," Eddie said, smiling. "Can you tell me how to get in touch with him?" "I'm sorry, mister, but Jake Warren passed away about 17 years ago. Terrible accident. The cabin that he and his wife liked to use as a little getaway in the woods burned up in a fire while they were sleeping. Their teenage son, too." She shook her head. "Such a tragedy." Eddie stood and stared at her for a moment, and then walked out of the diner without speaking, without even thanking her, rendered numb by what she had said. That concludes this episode of Wraiths of the Appalachian. As I mentioned, Hopkinsville, Kentucky is a real place, as are some of the other landmarks I mentioned, like the Pennyroyal Museum, where you can see exhibits on Edgar Casey and the Kentucky Goblins, Big Fellas Diner, and the Prince's Theater. I wouldn't go looking for Jake Warren's cabin if I were you. It's not there. Neither is Jake. Don't forget to check out Mamba Yulman's website at mambayulman.bandcamp.com, where you can listen to the album that inspired these episodes and many other equally eerie soundtracks. You can always keep up with what's going on by joining the Dark Corners Facebook group, and you can sign up for my bi-weekly newsletter by visiting my official website at, where? Say it with me, boys and girls, davidallenboyles.com. Thanks again for listening. Please tell your friends about the podcast. I'll see you again next time in the Dark Corners.